Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Red Eyes. Great to have you with us today. We have lined up for you an important show, a lot of recent news, a lot of things happening, actually, and I'm glad to have back on the show again, Blackpilled or Devin Stack. It's great to have you back again. How's it going, Devin?
Going good, good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, you bet. It was, what was it, 2018 sometime? I forget the date. I think it was actually about a year ago, October, I think it was actually. We spoke last time. So it's great to have you back. What have you been up to? Keeping, of course, up with making videos on YouTube and everything else. How are things going on the censorship front? Always important to check in with people. Are you losing subs? Are you losing views? What's the trend like for you?
Yeah, ever since I would say like April, I know that they delisted me out of some part of the algorithm because my views started just, you know, plummeting from there. And now it used to be about every other video would get demonetized, and now every video gets demonetized right when I release it. And then if I appeal it, about 10% of them will get remonetized. But, you know, I'm not really doing it for the money necessarily. I mean, the money's nice, obviously, to keep the lights on. But even if they demonetize my whole channel, you know, hopefully they don't. But if they do, I'll keep making content. So if they're trying to discourage us, I think, honestly, they're just making us more nimble. They're making us look into other ways of coming up with content we can monetize, like, you know, my book, for example. A lot of people are doing books, or they're doing Patreon exclusives and things like that, stuff that I'm going to be looking into. I know JF's doing that, what is it, Entropy, the it's like a plugin for when you do live streams, so you can still get super chats through like a third party. So you know, they can try to shut us down, and they, you know, they're a private company, and I'm sure Trump will monitor it closely as they do whatever they can. But in terms of actually getting this off the internet, it's never going to happen.
No, I don't think so either. And as you said, we have to become much more intelligent and cunning, I guess, in a way too. We have to employ techniques that are new. We have to think outside of the box. It does kind of, it puts the same, if you will, in a way, environmental or evolutionary pressures to a certain extent on us that it does to animals that, well, hopefully go on later on to become really successful at survival, right?
Right. Well, it's kind of like the opposite of what, Julian Assange was saying, that secrecy breeds incompetence. And, you know, meaning that, of course, when they do everything in secret, there's no oversight whatsoever. They're just using nepotism, hiring their friends on and their family. You're invariably going to get bad people work, you know, doing a bad job because there's no one to, there's no oversight. And so by essentially doing the opposite to us, where they're applying insane amounts of unfair oversight to us constantly, they are forcing out maybe some of the weaker links, but they're making some of us stronger and making us able to do our jobs better. So, yeah, I mean, I don't wish they weren't doing it, but at the same time, yeah, it's making us better. It's making us more effective.
Yeah, no, I think that that's true. And so speaking of censorship, I think we could dive in right away and talk a little bit about some of the stuff that's happened today. We have important news, of course. We're on September 10th today, the time of this recording, which means tomorrow, the 9/11 anniversary coming up 18 years ago. Can you believe that? It means that the people who were born around that time now can, go out legal, at least in Europe, right? Go out and drink and drive cars and stuff. Is it lower in the U.S. maybe with the car? But anyway, that means they're getting into adulthood. It's amazing. 18 years ago. And boy, yeah, has the world changed, Devin, since then.
Yeah, no, I still remember I was getting ready for work when I flipped on my TV, which is an old CRT tube TV, you know, and watching it. And in fact, actually, on my channel, I put this up last year, I think. I gathered every single broadcast and every piece of footage from that I could find, at least, from 9/11, and I stitched together one big long synced up viewing of the event. So if you weren't old enough to remember that day, and you just want to see what it was like to see that unfold in real time, I believe it's something like 4 hours long or something like that. It might even be longer. But if you just look at my channel, I forget what it's called. It's like 9/11 something. But you can, or maybe it's called 9/11 in real time. And you can just sit there and watch it, and it's synced up to all the different broadcasts. In fact, the Twin Towers, every piece of footage that was available is also synced up. So it might change cameras when I had to. But, you know, it's a good way to at least go back in time and kind of experience that. It's kind of surreal to do it. It was really weird to edit it and to make it. But I think it's worth watching. It might make you, you know, mad. It might make you sad. I don't know, but it's for me, when I was editing it, it was kind of emotional to watch it. And, you know, you see the people trapped at the top, you know, leaping from the top, trying to escape the fires. You see, in fact, when I was doing this, there was a lot of footage I didn't even know existed, because it didn't exist to the public until Freedom of Information Act requests made it available to people. So there's some angles that you might not have seen before. But pretty much there was always a camera on the Twin Towers, starting with the first, in fact, the first airplane someone captured that. There was a guy, I think it was a French cameraman that was there interviewing firefighters.
Firefighters, yeah. Renault brothers, I think it was a brother team.
Yeah, and then he just happened to, you know, lift the camera up because he heard the plane flying over and just barely caught it. But
yeah,
there was enough cameras even back then. You know, now it would have been, you know, you'd have like a billion angles of it. But even back then, there were enough cameras rolling to where from that moment on, there's always a camera on the towers. So
yeah,
if you want to check that out, obviously it got demonetized like right after I posted it, but it's worth checking out.
Is that a recent video? Here's your channel here.
No, I think I put it up last year. In fact, I think I put it up after 9/11, which, you know, from a marketing standpoint was probably a bad idea, but it took so long to put it together.
Yeah. Oh, I know how that goes. Yeah. I'll make sure to find it here later, and we can link it up. So a lot of things, and a little bit later too, folks, for you guys who are tuning in, I do want to talk with Devin about the PewDiePie issue, about him giving $50,000 to the ADL. I want to talk about Barbara Spector, a number of things that's happened, even the Bolton situation. Kind of, of course, tangentially kind of related to 9/11. We'll get into that with him being fired and stuff like that, some of the reactions. But this was a funny headline that I saw from the BBC here just before we got on. Was CIA too white to spot 9/11 clues? In other words, BBC is actually blaming white people for 9/11 because they weren't really diverse, as diverse as they are now, I guess, 18 years later. So back then, the CIA, if they just had maybe, I don't know, more, I guess, more Muslims, they could potentially have prevented this from happening. That kind of makes sense, right?
Well, I mean, in my opinion, I'm kind of in the Ryan Dawson camp, so I think fellow white people were responsible for 9/11.
No, I totally agree. I was gonna preface this. You can all these days you get lynched if you don't preface the topic with like saying, "Oh, I have there's questions. We know that it's all, you know, kind of phony and all that kind of stuff." So I'm glad you brought that up. But no, that's definitely worth. You know, again, the funny thing with it is that they're willing. BBC, other media outlets, to entertain and turn every single stone, including just turning on the people that were attacked on the day, right? To blame them as opposed to actually look at who really did this.
Well, if you think about it, it's a brilliant way of kind of distracting from people looking at who really did it. Just like when Ilhan Omar was saying, you know, some people did something or whatever that was, where all the boomer conservatives lost their minds and they were like, oh, it was Muslims. They hated our freedom. They hated our freedom and they got box cutters and, you know, learned how to fly jumbo jets in like a week. And so I think it's just another one of these situations where you're going to have these boomer conservatives who instantly, take the bait and say, it wasn't the white people in the CIA. It was Muslims that hated our freedom, you know. And I think that's just another. You know, every time they do that, it just gives them another chance to reinforce in the heads of these boomer conservatives to believe the official storyline of 9/11. So
yeah,
it's really frustrating that that's one thing. I mean, I don't know why I thought this, but I did think that you look at the interview of Trump on 9/11, where he's talking about how, he heard bombs and he looked like he was dubious about the whole thing. And I think even at certain points, or maybe even during the election during the campaign,
I think. Yeah,
he said like, oh, we'll get to the bottom of this. I, stupidly thought that we might actually see, I also thought Hillary would be locked up and in prison by now. But in that we'd have a wall, but, you know, like that was one of the things that I was kind of hoping we get to the bottom of, because right now we're living a lie. Like our entire foreign policy is built on a lie. And just not even just the foreign policy, just domestic policy, like the Patriot Act. You know, we had all these conservatives fighting for Kavanaugh to make it in the Supreme Court. Well, Kavanaugh was with Bush on 9/11 and helped write the Patriot Act. Like, you know, it's really doubtful, or at least in my opinion, that he's not, he doesn't understand the big picture of what happened. And so, we have people, that are in high places working alongside Trump. One less today, I guess, because Bolton's out of there. But we have a lot of people working alongside Trump who know what happened and aren't telling us, because for the same reason they're not telling us what happened to Epstein, you know, because, they don't want to, I mean, information is power, and they want all the power. So it's just, it's another, every 9/11 that comes by that we don't have at least, some kind of, acknowledgement from the government of what really happened. It's just another black pill to me, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it is tragic that it's so impossible to get people to ask questions about it and open their minds a little bit to entertain some different ideas, as opposed to just what the lying mainstream media. And I mean, that's really been a point which has been hammered away the last 2-3 years now with Trump in office. I mean, it's been an incredible schism. And if he has brought something good, it is his incredible ability to have the media turn on him in such an absurd way that people are like, whoa, what the hell is happening? Like, they've gone totally insane. They lie. They just make shit up. They just, you know, they just, there's no shame in these people. But what people need to realize is that this was the case before Trump as well. It was just that it wasn't so blatant because they didn't have a guy that they were fighting so hard against in such a high position, at least. There has been some kind of good things coming out of this, but yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, it's like, he's out now, John Bolton, as the national security advisor, which is good, because I remember when he was brought on, I was almost like, all right, that's it. This is over. Trump bringing on the same old neocons that want to just bomb other countries on behalf of Israel and stuff like that. So not sure that this will actually change anything, depending on who he brings on, of course. But I, you know, with Trump's concerned, nah, not much else has come out of it, sadly.
Yeah, I think you're right in terms of, to give you an idea, I used to believe the official storyline of 9/11. I even bought a copy of the 9/11 Commission report, and I would make fun of truthers, and, you know, of course, of them were kind of insane.
that was Cass Sunstein, right? The promotion of these, kind of exceptional wackos within the field so that you could kind of say it's all crazy conspiracies. Right. Anyway, I digress. Go ahead.
it's holograms, or it's, you know, a nuclear missile, or, you know, like, That was the thing, is you'd hear a lot of these crazy versions of it, and you'd be like, all right, no, it was just, I really believed it was Muslims that just hated us for our freedom or something I just maybe didn't understand. And, really what did help, solidify it for me was looking at the media in reaction to Trump. And, cause even in, I'd say as recently as, 2015, I was still kind of on the fence about a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I was starting to be a little more open-minded, but I was kind of like, well, I don't know. Like, could they really lie about all this shit? And then you see it and you're like, wow, holy shit, they really do lie.
Most of it, yeah. I mean, it's, what, like 85, 90%, I'd say? You know?
Yeah, and once you see how centralized media has been for, like, since, you know, for the last at least 70 years or so, it's really easy to understand why this would be something they'd have down to, you know, like a science.
It's science.
Something that's been a well-oiled machine for so long. And so it would, especially in the 90s or in 2000, it'd be so easy to pull off something like 9/11. Like, it used to sound like, oh, how could you coordinate something like that? Well, that's pretty easy if you really don't have the internet, if you don't have an ability for the people who may have saw it themselves, which there are a lot of people, a lot of first responders and whatnot, that will tell you a totally different story than the official story. But you would never hear from them because, you know, they're not going to be put on MSNBC or CNN or NBC or any of these alphabet networks. So, and now that we know that, you know, that Project Mockingbird, you know, probably was never canceled, there's a revolving door. No. Between the intelligence community, even now, like, you have Clapper works for CNN or MSNBC or whichever one, and Brennan, same thing. I mean, they're not even hiding it now. Like, you have the heads of the Intel community that got caught red-handed, lying to the public over and over and over again, just walking in after they walk out of their government office into a media office. And so, the frustrating thing there is, obviously, this should be obvious to anyone at this point, and there's still a lot of people who don't get it because they're just not tuned into what's going on, and so there's still some of that residue where you have people that they do get their worldview from just what they glean from pop culture and from late night television and stuff like that, where they don't actually do the research on the internet. But I think that's changing, and I think that'll change big time once that generation dies off, essentially.
This is why they're trying to shut it down, Devin. Obviously, we know that. Control information. I mean, warfare is now information warfare. That's recognized. All the intelligence services know this. And I wanted to show this quickly. There's so much interesting things to break down, just what you mentioned there. But I don't know if you're familiar with the Smith and Mundt Act, which is essentially a way they repealed the ban on propaganda in news agencies. In other words, there used to be a ban on propaganda that if you're as a television station or even as, government comes in and feeds a media network or something with intentional misinformation, you could end up in trouble, legally speaking, if it was found out and stuff. But that was repealed. Says for decades, so-called anti-propaganda law prevented the U.S. government mammoth broadcasting arm from delivering programming to American audiences. That was revealed. I forget what year that was. This was published in 2013, so it was not too long ago, I guess, which is kind of interesting. But it means that they can legally disseminate fake news and propaganda to the American people. And there is a specific arm, I forget which one it was. So I was reading up on this just the other day, but it's not fresh in my memory. That's right, the Broadcasting Board of Governors. And they have huge budgets. They are feeding outlets like Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and the Middle East Broadcasting Networks, only to mention a few. But as you said, the Mockingbird people, they're embedded in essentially, I'd say, every mainstream media outlet at this point.
Yeah, no, and I remember even after 9/11, or maybe it was during the Gulf War, I forget specifically, but there was a little bit of a stink where the State Department was giving information to different news outlets, and they were reporting it pretty much word for word. And some, maybe it was 9/11, because I remember George W. being the guy in the news conference when he got called out about it. And so it used to be something that people cared about. And then you have essentially, you mentioned Voice of America. That's essentially the propaganda broadcasting network that we have for the rest of the world, because there's parts of the world where they don't have national news, mostly like in Africa, places like that. And so they do tune into our propaganda to get their news. And, it was used during the wars and stuff like that to propagandize the enemies. And now that exact same propaganda is being turned against the American public. So,
that's right.
And there's nothing illegal about it. I worked in media long enough to know that reporters are lazy. And if you send them a press release that they can just read, 9 times out of 10, they'll just do that instead of having to actually do their job. So
that's right. No, the intelligence services, they provide them with the information, and they're just the dissemination arm of it. There's only very little original investigative reporting anymore, to be honest. It's just propaganda, agitprop, it's coercion, it's fake news, or it's just straight from the intelligence agencies and the spooks, essentially. So it's crazy. So this shit is going on, ladies and gentlemen. You can't. Every time I have personally have intricate knowledge of a story or been the subject of a story, even if it's it's been on CNN and shit like that too, Red Eyes and stuff we do, but every time I've been part of it, every time there's been either intentional misunderstandings or they misconstrue information, they misquote, they don't understand certain things, they mispronounce, they don't got the names right, they didn't get dates right. It's just error after error after error. And I know that because I was like part of it. I know the truth of some of these stories and the claims they make and the lies that they make up and shit like that. And so I just kind of started adopting that idea. Well, if they get this wrong about everything that I personally have knowledge about and know, then why would there be any different with any other story virtually? This is the standard now. It's insane.
Well, just before we came on, I got a Google alert. I have a Google alert set up for any time my name gets mentioned. And I got a Google alert because Media Matters included me in some story where they said that I was thrown out of a Biden event. And I've never even been to a Biden event. So
that's like, what I'm saying. They just make shit up, these people, you know? That's funny.
I would love to see their source for that. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I was thrown out of a Biden event.
I read on Media Matters the other day that Red Ice is still monetized on YouTube. Well, great. Yeah. That's news to me. So it's like the fucking liars. I'm sorry for the bad language, folks. But, you know, it is funny, but it's frustrating at the same time because there's no recourse for us, right? They lie, they make it up, and then these are the sources and the references that they use for the Wikipedia pages. And once it's on there, it's white supremacy and racist and neo-Nazi and all this kind of nonsense. And then that's what people get a hit for when they search Google first. You know what I mean? And so... It is defaming. It is frustrating, but at the same time, I guess at the same time, it's like if you're not grinding against the wheels of this machine that we have that is viewing us as enemies. If it hasn't turned on you to kind of at least here and there display some kind of wrath against you or try to destroy you, you're not doing something right. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and the thing is, the difference is, we are all, almost everyone I can think of, well, actually everyone I can think of, we're all self-funded and we're all self-motivated. A lot of these people have, in the opposition side, they have money coming in from billionaires. And so, you know, for example, JF, I think yesterday, the day before, was talking about how, he was just trying to go into Wikipedia to change, Paglia's,
I saw that one. Yeah.
To include her views on underage sex, and it was doing, you know, following all the Wikipedia rules, and like within, you know, moments of him making the change, there was already some guy in there deleting his post, and so they have these people that are like vultures that I think are paid. I mean, I don't think there's probably a few of them in their mom's basement doing whatever, but I think there's people that get paid to monitor these Wikipedia pages, and they just go in there and they slander people on the right, and they protect the profiles of those on the left. And unfortunately, that's just the way that it is. Like the power structure in the world right now is the globalist left. That's just the way it is. And so they are holding all the cards. They control all these platforms. There's not a single really right-wing platform or even I was talking to someone the other day. I was like, you know, what we need to do is we need to find billionaires on our side that'll actually fund some of these projects.
Absolutely.
But then you think about it, it's like, why would we're kind of against their interests? You know, they would never fund us because the kind of things that made them billionaires are the kinds of things that we're fighting.
Not necessarily. I mean, it could be inventors. It could be people who have just come up with some interesting solutions. They could have, sold companies or something that still have a, if they open their eyes and realize what is that's happening right now, especially to the people of European descent, the substitution agenda, the blatant open hostility, bigotry, and racism against people of European descent, etc., they would be like, hey, wait a minute, I got some money. I could help these outlets out and make sure that they can continue to get the word out. I don't think that that's an impossibility moving forward.
Well, I think it'd be possible, but it would almost have to be someone that's like retired, you know, because if they're not, They still have, if they're a billionaire, presumably, they still have to do business with all these other billionaires. And so if they're the odd man out, they're the one guy on the block that's going to start rocking
them. There are anonymous ways. There's cryptos and, you know, there are things they can do.
So I would love that. Yeah. If I just suddenly got like 100 Bitcoin dropped in my Bitcoin wallet.
Well, folks, the addresses are on our in our descriptions. So you know what to do. Go ahead and donate some. I do think that this is not, there's not fewer and fewer people that are concerned with this. There's not fewer and fewer people that are opening their eyes, realizing what's happening. It's quite the opposite, and that's why the establishment has gone so hard, I think, on individuals like us, organizations and outlets and people who are talking about these kinds of subjects. Broad scope from just anti-globalist sentiments to the open borders, the mass migration, substitution agenda, all these kinds of things. And I think that at some stage there's going to be a kind of a tipping point where a vast majority are aware. I'm not sitting around waiting for that, relying on that, but I think that is going to include some rich and powerful people that will actually share our concerns, to be honest.
Right. No, it would require some institutional established power, because I think one of the things that people kind of make the mistake in thinking is they think that, you know, for example, like if there's a, let's just say worst case scenario, there's a civil war type of scenario in the United States. This idea that a bunch of boomers with AR-15s could just go storm the Capitol and force them to arrest Hillary and stuff like, you know, like that's never going to happen. If you had, even in that kind of a scenario, you would need the help of like, governors of states, you know, local, National Guard, divisions. You know, you wouldn't be able to just, get a bunch of your friends in a bunch of Jeeps and just, you know, take over a state or something like that. So if for anything drastic to happen, anything, that's really going to make, I think, a change, you have to rely on institutional power. And obviously, ideally, the peaceful way would be better. And the peaceful way would require, obviously, institutional power and some kind of established power structure. And that's one thing we lack right now, too, is, you know, there's a lot of these voices on the right, all these different YouTube channels, all these different podcasts, and all these content creators. But we don't have any infrastructure, you know, we don't have any foundations, we don't have a legal team, we don't have anything like the ADL or something like that that's gonna, that has our back, you know, we don't have, we're all kind of just, scattered islands in this ocean. And, I think that's something that we should focus on moving forward, especially with the legal stuff, because I feel like in a lot of cases we have legal grounds to do stuff, like in terms of the demonetization with YouTube. I think that when you're being unfairly singled out, and especially if it's in response to a third party, you know, Vox Day has brought up tortious interference. If a third party tries to interfere with your business relationship, in this case, this would be like Red Ice and YouTube, or Blackpilled in YouTube, you have a third party like SPLC or ADL say, oh, you know, these guys are haters, and so you need to deplatform them, and then YouTube actually responds by doing so, that's tortious interference, because
that's right.
They're purposely stepping in and destroying or attempting to damage a business relationship you already have. So if we had lawyers, if we had the ability to bring lawsuits against these organizations, because, you know, Lord knows the SPLC's just got hundreds of millions of dollars. They could, you know, they could just wait you out if you tried to sue them. So if we had some kind of nonprofit where we'd had some pro bono, competent lawyers, I think a lot of this stuff, would be taken care of. They'd maybe be a little more shy about just randomly deplatforming people if they thought there was going to be some kind of legal repercussion.
I think there are, you know, yeah, go ahead.
As much as, you know, I give PragerU a lot of shit, they are suing YouTube right
yes.
now.
Yep.
And so it'll be interesting to see where that case goes.
I agree. It was a good video. I saw it by the attorney that's representing them. Forget his name now, Roberts, I think something. And it was a good video. It explains it in detail, specifically about the heart of the matter is, are they a platform or a publisher? They do have special protections under 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which they're in violation of now, because now, of course, they are acting more like a publisher as opposed to a platform, because they're deciding what goes and what doesn't. And then you have, as you just rightly as you said, third parties that have stepped into the picture, like the ADL, which has been a very, very, very effective and powerful bullying and lobbying organization that essentially either have some kind of, I'm not saying that they're threatening YouTube. I don't think they have to. I do think it might even be personal relationship on the back end or something, which is enabling these people to get a foot in through the door and then effectively, literally releasing hit lists on their own website and telling them. I mean, they're entering into partnership with YouTube now where they say these channels, remove them, take it down. And in most cases, YouTube has complied with those kinds of demands. And as I know you saw it in passing too, if we're going to fight these organizations, it doesn't help when people like PewDiePie is donating $50,000 to the ADL so they can continue with their legal activities and attacking people and defending themselves later on when they're brought to court. Because I think, Devin, just to pick up on that note as well, they are pushing the limits, and at one point there is going to be a class action lawsuit against maybe not only YouTube and these organizations, potentially even the ADLs or SPLCs, because, as you say, rightly so, they have limited the business opportunities for countless independent companies and organizations that do media and many other things, us included. And I don't think that that's going to last forever, to be honest. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the PewDiePie thing goes, I think he's kissing the ring. You know, like the same sort of thing happened with him, right? Like he said a couple things in a stream. I don't remember specifically even what they were.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't remember what specifically he was saying on his stream, but he said, I think, like, the N-word or something like that. And he had some big contracts, like big millions of dollars, with Disney. And as soon as it got pushed by whatever it was, BuzzFeed or ADL or whoever it was, he lost millions and millions of dollars just over, his gamer language in a gamer stream.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, I do fault him because it's not like he's hurting for cash. You know what I mean?
No.
I mean, PewDiePie has got enough money to where he could just stop making videos right now and he'd be good to go. So it's a little weird to me that he feels like he has to do this. And, you know, it's greed really is what it is.
He's trying to save his own skin, essentially.
Right.
And then siding with the biggest bully organization on YouTube, which is the main coercive force in why YouTube has become a censorious platform.
Right. No, he's kissing the ring. He's telling him he's going to play ball. And, I know there's a lot of delusional people on 4chan that are going to be very upset when they hear this news.
Let me play the clip. See what actually.
Power guy.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, he's not. Listen to this. Here's the portion.
With the video. But as an additional celebration, I'm donating $50,000 to Anti-Defamation League, which is an organization that fights bigotry and prejudice in all its forms. Thank you, honey, for sponsoring this video.
It moved on quickly from that, but that's a lie. They actually are not, because they are actually spending the majority of the time targeting individuals, organizations, groups that are specifically pointing out racism, bigotry, hatred, especially against people of European descent, of course. But that's why they're targeting people like us and many others on YouTube and off the YouTube platform in other settings. I do believe that they are responsible in bullying financial organizations into dumping us. We've had our personal accounts shut down with PayPal, Wells Fargo, Venmo, Zelle, Coinbase, and a number of other things. And I can't prove that it's the ADL, but I think it's the ADL, right? So they are extremely vicious organization when it comes to targeting individuals that they do not agree with. And again, you can have a message which essentially is about pointing out double standards and exposing the kind of hatred that is acceptable now against people of European descent, and that's considered to be hate.
Well, and that's the kind of thing, if we had the money or the backing to have a lawyer or some kind of organization to sue the ADL, that you'd find out in discovery. You'd find out, were they the ones that talked to Wells Fargo? Were they the ones that talked to Coinbase? And then that would open up Coinbase and Wells Fargo, et cetera, to a legal liability as well. And so all it takes is really to have that initial suit filed and get discovery, get these documents, these internal documents and the internal communications to really see how this is going about. Like what is this machine how does it get from some guy, some volunteer somewhere at ADL watching a video that triggers them to the creator of that video losing their ability to bank, you know? And so I think it's something that needs to be done. It's something that we need to look into doing. I know there's talk of that union, in Germany. I don't think that's going to really be, I mean, that might help a little bit, but that's YouTube specific. I think there should be some kind of organization that the dissident right has. Even though we may have a wide variety of views on different topics, you know, and disagreements on certain things. I think if we could come together in some way or another and at least agree that we should all have the right to speak and pool our resources in some way. I don't know what that would even look like, but I think that that's something that we should be looking at going forward.
Yeah, I mean, class action lawsuit, and of course Google has now opened up to being the investigation, right? All these attorney generals from 50 states and territories in the U.S. have opened an investigation into antitrust when it comes to Google's practices, specifically within advertisement and search. They had a press conference, I believe it was yesterday. I watched that. It was pretty good. And one of the attorney generals had essentially said that he's also leaving the door open to investigating other areas, which would, of course, stretch from election meddling to censorship to interference to subversion, essentially, as well, because of the way that they are choosing and disseminating data or search results or who gets to be listed first or what kind of information. I mean, these are big issues. I think that this process is just starting. I think as well, Google or Alphabet, which they're, you know, the head company called now, they acquired about 30 or 270 companies in about a 2-decade period, swallowing up essentially every competitor, startups, which they saw as a threatening factor and things that they just wanted to accumulate. So they have just crossed the boundary in so many different ways. And again, I'm not surprised that it's taken this long. But the problem is, and I think you kind of alluded to that too, Devin, that the relationship now between the Googles and the Apples and the government is it's so weaved together, right? I mean, they get massive amounts in subsidies, which would make it a clear violation of the issues of free speech, you'd think. But then you realize at the same time that the government is now asking these companies for favors when it comes to like spying on people. Even Trump was proposing using Amazon Echo and the home device that Google offers to spy on people with this red flag law issue. Did you see any of that?
Yeah, that's some scary stuff. That's the kind of thing. I knew I had a friend that got a Alexa, and I was like, "What are you doing? you're putting a machine in your house that's, you know, it will be abused. You know, it's gonna record you. I mean, because the way that Siri works, for example, is or even like the Google version of that, and even the Microsoft version of that, they record constantly. They're always recording, and then it listens for that trigger phrase. And when it hears that trigger phrase for it to be activated, that's when it launches. But it's always recording. And in fact, the speech recognition, at least with the phones, doesn't take place on the phone. It takes place on a server at Apple. So when you say, like, even when you're just dictating something on your phone with Apple products, it's actually uploading your voice in real time to a server at Apple. Then it's doing the transcribing there and then sending the text back to your phone. That's why it doesn't work if you don't have a signal. And so everything you've ever dictated, everything that you've ever dictated to, whether it's, you know, on an Apple product, a Microsoft product, on a Amazon product, a Google product, your voice, and it's, you know, it's really compressed. So it's not like they don't have the storage capacity to store this stuff. It gets stored on a server somewhere, and there's no way to know, like, how long do they keep that? You know, and if they keep it for, they could keep it potentially forever. It's like that huge server farm the NSA has in Utah, where that's specifically just there to store all the internet traffic that they're able to steal. And then they use this weird logic where, okay, well, it's not really an invasion of privacy if we promise not to look at it until we have a warrant. And then once we have a warrant, we can retroactively look at everything we've ever gleaned from your connection. And so companies like Apple and Google and Microsoft, they could essentially use the same logic. They could say, oh yeah, well, we're recording and storing everything that you say around our devices and putting it in this massive database, but we don't look at it unless law enforcement asks us to look at it. And now just think of like every conversation you've ever had around a device, and it might not even have to be yours. You know, it could be a device that your friend has that's listening in on, you know, for his trigger, and it's still getting uploaded. It's still getting recorded. And then they can use, you know, voice mapping to find out, you know, to differentiate your voice from their voice. And they can add that to your file. Like, oh, well, here's something that Devin was saying on this other person's device. And so we'll just put it in his file. And then they can go back, and if they're doing the red flag stuff, and this is the Trump administration, by the way, that was talking about doing this. This isn't like Hillary Clinton's plan. So the Trump administration could just say, hey, I need to look at everything that do a search in this database that has essentially a recording, a transcription of everything Devin has ever said around any device that was listening, which is like everywhere. In any time there's these words, you know, like terrorism or, you know, whatever the list of words ends up being, then you can send us, you know, the relevant paragraphs. And then you have some faceless, or maybe it's just even an AI, and who knows, it might not even be a human at that point, that determines based on how many hits you get in this database, how often you've said these bad words, that, okay, this person is no longer allowed to own a weapon, and it just contacts the authorities to come in and swat you, you know. So it's
crazy.
It's really, really
free
kind
crime,
of freaky.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's something that everyone should think about. If you've got one of these Alexas in your house, or if you use any of this dictation stuff, just realize that that's what's happening.
Even a phone. I mean, it doesn't, and that's been revealed like multiple times now. It doesn't matter. Even if it's off, it can buffer and store. And then, even then when you later turn it back on, or on and off the internet connection. And this is stuff that we don't think about. But as you say, all this stuff is being stored now, and eventually down the road when they start building profiles, or again, another agency is created, another maniac politician comes in and takes over and just like, we got to stop all terrorism and kind of to weave this into a little bit what we talked earlier about 9/11, that, you know, all those things that they set up at that point to protect us and save us, like the Patriot Act and, you know, all these kinds of things, is draconian homeland security and stuff. All that now, if you look at how the rhetoric has changed as well, has essentially turned into, it's actually the white nationalists that's the biggest terrorist threat now in America. Forget about Al-Qaeda, forget about these Muslim terrorists who haven't had too many attacks in recent years. So now the new enemy is these white people who think that they're being, they think that there is a substitution agenda. They believe that it's unfair that the borders are open and stuff. And actually, they're very dangerous because they could just go out and shoot anybody at any time, although the statistics for that are like minute, and you get shootings from every walks of life in all these kinds of different fields as well. People at gaming conventions shoot up people at back to school parties go up and shoot each other, or gangs that shoot each other every damn weekend in some of these cities in America and Europe as well now. But the point is, it's the rhetoric, right? It's what they're deciding to hone in on with these judicial hearings on white supremacy and white nationalism and stuff. So we're seeing where this is going. If you see what I'm saying, that all those things that were put in place by these draconian measures early on are now being reshifted and refocused to turn towards, you know, domestic terrorism, essentially.
Yeah. All it would take is, you know, one person like Kamala Harris, getting elected. And, I mean, look at the way that the Obama administration totally abused the FISA warrant situation with Trump. And look what happened to them. Nothing. You know, there was, again, this goes back to the whole no oversight, no accountability for the ruling class. So if they're not afraid of abusing it. I mean, nothing happened to Lois Lerner when she was using the IRS as a weapon against, the Tea Party. Nothing happened to the people responsible for Fast and Furious with, you know, giving weapons to Mexican drug cartels. Nothing happened to really anybody except for Julian Assange, the guy that told us about it, a lot of this stuff. So if you have a Kamala Harris administration, there's going to be no incentive for them to not use it, because there's no oversight. And even when they do get caught just by accident, which is the case with the Obama administration with the FISA abuse stuff, nothing happens, you know, or with Hillary Clinton with the email server, nothing happens. And so there's no incentive for them to not use it. And in fact, they're just going to be further emboldened. They're going to want to use it because right now it's still embarrassing when they get caught, you know. And so if they can use this technology to not even get caught, you know, then which they could do, I mean, they could use this technology to find out that journalists are even talking about this sort of thing. You know, like it's kind of like they had that. Well, what was the Batman movie that where he accesses all the different phones and starts like making this 3D map of everything? And like it was one of the ones, Christopher Nolan ones, one of the
Dark Knight or something, or.
Yeah, and then he's like, this power is it's too great, I need to destroy it. Well, I mean, I knew then that was something that we already had. You know, that was something that government was already using. So all it would take is the wrong person. And if, you know, you look at the demographic shift, if that doesn't get turned around, I think it's too late for that. That's inevitable. So it's not even a matter of if this is going to happen. It's just a matter of when. So
yeah, you'll have a whole system which is just have honed in on like white people are the problem, right, kind of thing. So all these securities and things were put in place by, like, you know, the Muslim threat, right? And then ironically, a lot of Americans and Europeans were like, yeah, we have to do something about this. And yeah, but surveillance, control, you know, we got to curb this chaos. And then it turns out the whole machine, I mean, a lot of people, including, you know, Red Eyes and people like us and stuff, were talking about this in the early days when these things were being rolled out. Like, this will be just be used against us eventually. You know, I'm very suspicious about it. Obviously, something has to be done about, like, if there's genuine terrorism. But in many regards, you do have sting operations. You do have setups. You have situations where the establishment intentionally let their guard down to let something happen, or they even groom some of these individuals, like we've seen. And then they just use that as an excuse to kind of, you know, take more control, to offer more security and to keep us safe. And then it's just being used against us, essentially, at the end of the day. It's a horrific situation, but they're very clever. I give them that much.
Yeah, well, and 9/11 obviously is the greatest example of that. And you have to understand, like, that's who we're up against. We're up against people who, to get what they want, are totally okay with morally justifying killing over 2,000 of the people that it's their duty to protect. And then use that not only to pass all these surveillance laws that they were able to pass domestically, but then to use that also to kill more people in the Middle East to get what they want in terms of, you know, the contracts that they wanted and the friendly governments that they were hoping to install. So we're up against people who really don't care. If they want to make an omelet, they know they have to break a few eggs. It's not going to, you know, keep them up at night. So
yeah, and then
people need to keep in mind.
No, that's right. And then also keep in mind that that's the excuse which we've seen the whole wave of migrants into primarily Europe, obviously piggybacking on the Syrian and the Iraq war. But all of those things opened up, you know, in the beginning with the Afghan war, then the invasion of Iraq, which was done on a faulty lie, on a lie about WMDs. That's come out. That's, you know, now they're sitting around talking about this with Tony Blair and Bush and, you know, Colin Powell and these people who lied us into this shit. And it's like, oh, well, you know, yeah, we made a wrong assessment kind of thing. Well, look at the damage now that, you know, all those wars opened up for ISIS to be created in the region, which, of course, also we have a lot of questions about. Who's funding them? Who's allowing them to be there? Why is it that the coalition forces, like in Syria, when they had the chance to eliminate ISIS in their last stronghold in Raqqa, let them escape into Turkey? They had drones and air flights right over this huge convoy of like 4,000 ISIS soldiers just going into Turkey, and then they have vanished into Europe and stuff like that. You know, they funded and supported a lot of these people at the end of the day, too. But so all of this is kind of like creates this combined image of like globalization, the war, all the contracts, the mass migration waves, then the subsequent substitution agenda of the people in Europe and stuff like that. So it's all tied together. There's a rhyme and reason to this supposed insanity that we're seeing right now, especially in the Middle East.
Right, and it all comes back to 9/11. I think 9/11 really was a paradigm shift. I think that's when, I mean, a lot of this stuff has been set in motion a long time ago, and, you know, and there's always been this kind of backroom dealing, and you know, you can keep going back. You can say, oh, before 9/11, there was, you know, the Kennedy assassination, and before that, there was, you know, Pearl Harbor or whatever, and, you know, you'd be right. It does go back essentially indefinitely. You know, the ruling class has never been exactly upfront and honest about what they're doing. But I really think 9/11 was a huge paradigm shift in that they were able to essentially erode large portions of the Constitution, while simultaneously destabilizing the entire Middle East and, enriching themselves, all at the same time. So they really kind of accomplished a lot of what they had to get done in order for this globalization experiment to work. So
yeah,
it's a shame that we can't get anyone to be honest about it. That's one thing that I was really hoping Trump would have I wasn't expecting them to like march W into prison or, you know, do the perp walk and that sort of a thing, but at least get, you know, the fact that we got the dancing Israelis, the photo, released with that Freedom of Information Act request, and they censored out the faces and they blew out the background so you couldn't see the towers behind them. That just basically, it's a great metaphor for kind of what we're ever going to get out of this. You know, the amount of truth that we're going to get out of this.
Yeah, no, that's true. We didn't really, God, we have to do something on that too. I remember Adam Green, No More News, Ryan Dawson, they covered this, I think, in pretty good detail. The Dancing Israelis, FBI docs shed light on apparent Mossad foreknowledge of 9/11 attacks. And again, what they did to the images there. But there's so much information which is being covered up. And again, I think, you know, there's so many issues and everything in light with what you just mentioned and talked about. We are up against a behemoth which has so much power, so much influence, so much of everything that it feels impossible. But again, one of the things that's the primary function that we've had has been with the internet to at least be able to expose this kind of stuff and talk about it. And that's why I think, you know, it goes back to that issue that this must be this is the most important thing, because this is how we can wake up our fellow, you know, Americans, fellow Europeans, and people who are concerned with these kinds of issues and the globalization process, what it is that's happening right now. And if we can't even talk about this stuff, if we can't disseminate the information, if we can't reach out to people and new people as well and help to awaken them, then we really don't have anything. And now they're even encroaching into not only just silencing people online, now it's encroaching into a territory that if you have the wrong beliefs, including like if you think certain conspiracy theories are real, they're talking about criminalizing those, essentially turning you into a terrorist if you believe some of these ideas. There's no end in sight of what they're willing to do to shut up the individuals and the people that they see as, I guess they see them, despite them, everything, as a formidable enemy and something dangerous that potentially could topple this global elite. Otherwise, why would they act in this way of trying to criminalize speech and criminalize people's beliefs?
Well, it absolutely is. It's the chink in the armor. You know, the fact that we can communicate, I mean, the fact that we can have a little device, the same device that they use to spy on you all day. You can get that device, take it out of your pocket. If you're at the scene of a crime, or at the scene of some kind of news story, and just start broadcasting it to potentially millions of people. That kind of power isn't something I think that they necessarily understood that they were unleashing. I think that when they were, because, you know, the internet was initially developed by, you know, DARPA and the military, to use, as a, you know, network for them. And I think they were looking at more as a commerce kind of a thing. They didn't think that they were handing over the keys to the media, to information, to news, the way that it's kind of turned out. So, and, you know, even I think they saw this early on, because even when Obama was president, I believe it was into his second term at one point, he got a lot of flack from some even leftists at the time that hadn't quite jumped the shark with this Russia hysteria yet, when he made some comments about how the internet needed to be curated. It needed to be controlled by the internet or by the government. And so I think that they've realized this, you know, early on, but at this point, it's kind of hard to stick the genie back in the bottle. And as long as we can keep people, because at the end of the day, we do have power. Like, I don't want people to think that, oh, we're just powerless. We're against this big globalist machine. We don't have a say. No, that's not the truth, because they can only do, even if it's manufactured consent, they can only do what we give them consent as, you know, and when I say we, collectively as a society, give them consent to do. Now, they know that we, at least for right now, we still outnumber them. We're very well-armed public here in the United States. They know that they can only push people so far. And they can, you know, whittle away at it slowly, boil the frog slowly, and finally get what they want. But there is a line they can't cross. And so I think by keeping people engaged and keeping people understanding how important it is to have free speech on the internet and to participate, and not just watch, you know, shows like yours or channels like mine, but make channels of their own and to be actively participating in this free exchange of information that we have these days, it ensures that it's going to stick around. Because if no one watched us right now, it would be easy for them to, I mean, if there was no outcry at all when they took us, when they deplatformed us, that would be it. You know, they wouldn't do anything. That would be the end of it. You wouldn't even know about it. But the fact of the matter is we are starting to get audiences that are large enough to actually have a little bit of political power in terms of remaining on the internet and remaining or maintaining this ability that we have to communicate. So it's important that we keep it as part of our lives.
Yeah, no, definitely. Absolutely. Very, very well said. I want to take a break here. We've been going over time with the first segment a little bit, but that's okay. There's a lot of interesting things here, so much to break down. And I want to talk, among other things, about this story when we return after a break here, about DARPA unleashing an anti-meme militia to fight both deep fakes but also viral con memes. It's a meme anti-meme militia, essentially, that they're starting up. They've realized the potency and the importance of these super quick ways of like changing someone's mind. Essentially, they work like viral bombs. Some of these things. It was a Verge article about the people that worked at Facebook to moderate content. Very interesting study in their psychology. How a lot of some people kind of went a little nuts almost, but they were sitting there watching like things like this, like memes, and people started to change it. They worked in this outsourcing department. I forget what the company was called. It was down in like Texas or something. And I'll pull it up later too in part two here, and we can just show that quickly. Very interesting story that shows how their psychology changed. Some people started to believing in like 9/11 was an outside job, a conspiracy. You know, who was behind it? What happened? You know, it really opened their minds, and it was interesting. And so I don't think they're late to the game in that sense. I think they've studied this for a while, but now they're going public with the fact that they're going to start fighting back against memes, which is very interesting. So that, together with this issue with Barbara Spector and her joining up in Jerusalem with, among others, Lord Jacob Rothschild to discuss, and I'm quoting one of the headlines here come out from finance section of Yahoo News, to unite global Jewry, unquote, was the line that they had in the headline. And of course, Barbara Spector is of fame from Paideia, which was involved in this very interesting admission, if you will, of trying to intentionally bring in migrants into specifically to Sweden, but also to all of Europe. This clip, world famous back in 2010, was released. And so we thought that she had no influence. She doesn't have any power. She's just a wacko little gal, whatever. It doesn't matter. Well, now turns out she's meeting with the highest within the most established rabbis and scholars within the Jewish community in Jerusalem, to actually have a new plan to kind of initiate a new step in the process of ensuring a bright future for them. We'll talk more about that in part two. Very, very interesting. So those are some of the things we're going to get into. But Devin, tell us about your YouTube channel. I'm sure everyone watching are familiar with it, but in case we have newcomers, tell them how to support your work, what they can find there and stuff like that. You do have a new video out too, which we have to talk a little bit more about, I guess, in part two. But if you briefly want to tell us about it, go ahead.
The channel is Blackpilled. You can go to blackpilled.com. Although I haven't updated it with the new video yet. I also have a book, but I can't say the name of it. I don't think, at least not on Twitter. You'll get banned, but if you
it's
look
a hard
name,
R, Devin, right?
Yeah. Devin Stack is the, or actually if you go to my channel, there'll be a link to the book there too, but there's an audiobook, paperback. My last video, just covers some, propaganda that was, released in 1947. It was a film that won Best Picture that was, pushing an agenda that we're kind of going to be talking about in, the second hour here, but it's, the name of the video, I believe, is The Cure for Gentlemen.
That's right.
And it's about, kind of a big propaganda push that was done in 1947 after World War II.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing a little bit more about that, your latest video. But in the meantime, guys, blackpilled.com, of course, is the website. And always make sure that you go there. Same thing with our website, redice.tv and redicemembers.com. Redice members, we have our own platform there. We host all our content. We do have the ability to live stream as well directly to redice.tv. In case we're ever taken down from YouTube and or DLive. So it's important you bookmark all the people that you follow, their individual website, sign up for the newsletter, whatever they offer on their site so that you can follow them, because it could be just one swoop and a lot of these people are gone from the major platforms like we saw with Alex Jones and stuff like that. So, yeah, very important. But, yeah, Blackpilled, check it out, and the book as well, The Day of the Thread.
the Day of the String.
Yeah, exactly. Is the book as well. And you said there was a link from YouTube to the book?
I'll actually.
For the site, maybe.
Description of all my videos has a link to it.
Okay. Yeah, check out the website as well. I think it's in the store there. But yeah, blackpill.com. There's some shirts and stuff there too. So check that out. Good way of supporting Devin as well. But yeah, we'll take a short break here, guys. We'll be back with much more in part two. Join us at redicememberst.com. We'll pick up after the break.